If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
The White House held a congressional ball this evening, while Mitch McConnell held two presidential balls.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, you'll hear Seth's interview with comedian Dan Soder. Plus, exclusively for this podcast, Dan chats with late night warm-up comic Ryan Reese. But first, a closer look.
Today, the House Judiciary Committee debated two articles of impeachment against President Trump, setting the stage for a vote of the full House. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Well, here we are. We're getting closer to the day when the full House will vote on two articles of impeachment against Trump. For 3 years, this moment has somehow felt both inevitable and also impossible at the same time. We've all been in this weird limbo where every day Trump does something that makes you think, that dude's gonna get impeached. And then the next morning you wake up, check your phone, and there's a news alert that says something like, Republicans shrug off Trump threats to release nude pics unless France sells him the Eiffel Tower. And then you tune into CNN, and sure enough, there's one Republican after another dodging reporters and literally hiding in elevators to avoid answering questions. Republicans spend so much time in elevators, Ted Cruz is just gonna start showing up to the Senate looking like a bellhop. Thanks to Trump, Republicans in elevators react to reporters the way the rest of us react to that weird coworker who's always inviting you to his DJ gigs. Oh, it's Gary. He's gonna give me one of those flyers that says DJ G Money. In fact, Trump himself is reportedly angry that he's being impeached and also shocked that it took this long to get him. CNN reported yesterday that after all the scandals he's weathered and all the crimes he's been implicated in, Trump's actually surprised that this is the one that got him.
We are hearing President Trump is growing increasingly aggravated over the likelihood that he will be impeached. Meanwhile, a separate Trump advisor said the president has been preparing in his mind for some time that this moment would arrive, suspecting for the better part of the last year the Democrats would try to impeach him after taking control of the House last year. This advisor said Mr. Trump is somewhat taken aback. We should note that it's the Ukraine scandal that is leading to this moment, leading to his impeachment in the House. And we could put this up on screen. This advisor said, and we want to show this quote, frankly, I think he's a little surprised talking about the president here, that it's the Ukraine thing that's done it.
That is an amazing confession. Think about that. That's like getting pulled over for a broken taillight and saying, taillight? I got like 10 dead bodies in my trunk. Ain't this a kick in the head? But it's true. Trump has blatantly and repeatedly abused his powers. He obstructed justice in the Russia probe, inflicted human rights abuses on migrant families, profited from his office, solicited a bribe, and paid hush money and an illegal scheme to cover up an affair. And on top of all that, he attacked a 16-year-old climate activist, Greta Thunberg, simply for trying to save the planet from an existential crisis. Trump tweeted today Today, Greta must work on her anger management problem, then go to a good old-fashioned movie with a friend. Chill, Greta, chill. You want her to chill? Whenever you scream, you look like a tick that's about to burst. I mean, look at him. He looks like a rabid possum hissing at you for disturbing his nest. Also, you are a 73-year-old man attacking a 16-year-old activist because she cares about the environment. Think about how sad that is. You are a husk of a man. Actually, not even. For there to be a husk of a man, there would have had to have been a man to begin with. You're a husk of a husk. You are a Russian nesting doll of husks. And on top of all that, at this very moment, Trump's henchmen are still in the process of committing crimes for him. His lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, traveled to Europe and specifically Ukraine to keep digging up dirt on Trump's political opponents.
With the heat on Rudy Giuliani in the midst of the Ukrainian investigation, Rudy has decided there's no better time for a trip to Eastern Europe interviewing people about Ukraine. More specifically, working on a new project to discredit the Democrats' case against the president.
That's right. In the middle of an impeachment inquiry about Ukraine, Rudy decided to go back to Ukraine. That's like going back to the bank you robbed to get your Christmas card photo taken on the security camera. Rudy also went to Ukraine as he himself is personally under criminal investigation for his ties to Ukraine. And one of his already indicted henchmen, Lev Parnas, is also in even more hot water now. Remember these two, Lev and his buddy Igor, you know, the guys who look like two cab drivers from Queens fighting over a passenger? Hey, I was here first. I'm going to kill you. Okay, see you at Christmas. You are my brother. Well, yesterday, prosecutors asked to revoke Parnas' bail and revealed an incriminating detail about a large sum of money from a foreign country, and you'll never guess which country that money came from.
And U.S. prosecutors are seeking to revoke bail for Lev Parnas, an associate of Rudy Giuliani, for lying about a $1 million payment from Russia.
That's right. He got $1 million from someone in Russia. The only way that could be more suspicious is if it came in the form of a gym bag filled with unmarked rubles with a luggage tag that said V. Putin. It's like all the threads of every Trump scandal are coming together. Rudy, secret money, Ukraine, Russia. I wouldn't be surprised if, at this point, Robert Mueller himself came to arrest Trump, tore off his mask, and revealed that he was Stormy Daniels the whole time. Now, usually Republicans are able to dodge questions about all of this by hiding in elevators. That's one of the many reasons these public impeachment hearings have been so valuable. Republicans have been forced to sit there and confront the evidence in plain sight. And we've all been able to see in real time that they have no defense. They have nothing. That's why, for example, so many of them talk so fast. They're hoping you can't make out any of the words because they know what they're saying is bullshit.
Ambassador Taylor recalls that Mr. Morrison told Ambassador Taylor that I told Mr. Morrison that I conveyed this message to Mr. Yarmak on September 1st, 2019 in connection with Vice President Pence's visit to Warsaw. They forget the fact the two guys on the call, President Trump and President Zelensky, have said repeatedly there was no pressure, no linkage, no pushing. They forget the fact Ukraine didn't even know aid was held at the time of the call. And they forget the fact, most important, they did nothing to get the aid released, no announcement of any type of investigation.
He sounds like the narrator at the end of a drug commercial warning you about the side effects. Impeachment may cause fever, headache, vomiting, diarrhea, blurry vision, and, of course, loss of balance. These guys don't have any actual arguments. So they just speed through a string of right-wing buzzwords as fast as possible and hope it sounds like a coherent sentence. But sometimes even they get confused by their own bullshit, like the time Lindsey Graham tried to attack the motives of Trump's hand-picked ambassador, Gordon Sondland, the guy who gave $1 million to Trump's inaugural committee, who said unequivocally under oath that there was a quid pro quo with Ukraine and who pulled a flea bag in this photo where he looked directly into the camera during his hearing. That's fantastic. That looks like the post-credit scene from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Well, Graham tried to claim on Fox News that Sondland was somehow working with the Democrats on the committee and that the Ukrainian company Hunter Biden worked for, which was called Burisma, deserved to be investigated, and yet Graham couldn't pronounce either the name Burisma or the name Sondland.
There was concern that the prosecutor was getting too close to Hunter Biden, that people from Burisma, whatever the name of the company, a conversation with Sondland. Now, here's a question. Why did Sondland change his testimony? Was there a connection between Sondland and Democratic operatives on the committee? It makes me incredibly suspicious. Why did Sondland change his mind?
I don't know. Why did you change his name to Sondland? It's like when your dad tries to text you about a movie you just saw but can't remember any of the names. I like that actor. What's his name? Leonardo DiCaprio? We've seen this in hearing after hearing. Republicans just ramble nonsensically because it's their only tactic. All the evidence is there, as Democrats laid out in their speeches during the Judiciary Committee's markup hearing on Wednesday night and again this morning.
President Donald J. Trump wielded the enormous powers of the presidency to cheat in the 2020 election.
We must hold this president accountable for corrupting our democracy.
The ongoing pattern of this president's abuse of power, his obstruction of investigations, refusing to turn over even one document.
In this scheme, Donald Trump was not an incidental player. He was the central player.
The president was the first and best witness in this case. The president is the smoking gun.
It's true. Trump is the smoking gun. And much like a gun, his brain is only capable of holding six words at a time. Republicans have no coherent defense, so they just have to make stuff up. And in some cases, I mean, they're literally making up words. Today, during the Judiciary Committee debate, the ranking member Doug Collins complained once again about the impeachment process, which is both in the Constitution and has been open to the public, and Collins seemed to make up a word.
It is amazing, though, to hear now they've gotten really sensitive about process on the majority side. When we actually pointed out the tragedy and the travesty of being a rubber stamp in this committee, and the gentleman from Florida has brought out a couple of things. But let me just remind, as he said just a few minutes ago, the White House going to send everything? Nope, it's just like everything else. It all goes through the whim and the whimper of the chairman and the majority.
The whim and the whimper sounds like the name of a Russian soap opera about Lev and Igor. Republicans keep insisting that Trump was just worried about corruption in general and that he wasn't demanding an investigation into his political rival Joe Biden, even though Trump mentioned the Bidens by name on his infamous phone call multiple times. So that argument is obviously ridiculous. This whole thing was all about Joe Biden and the Democrats. Trump and Republicans had full control of the government for 2 years and didn't say a word about corruption in Ukraine until Biden announced his candidacy. And denying that basic fact makes you look ridiculous, which is what happened to Republican lawyer Steve Castor at the judiciary hearing on Monday when he tried to claim that Joe Biden was not a frontrunner in the presidential race.
Sir, would you agree that Joe Biden was a leading Democratic contender to face President Trump in 2020?
I wouldn't agree with that.
You disagree with it. So, sir, it's your testimony.
It's too early.
That President Trump did not view President Biden to be a legitimate contender.
I don't know what President Trump believed or didn't believe, but it's too early.
Sir, as part of your inquiry, did you determine whether President Trump tweeted at all about former Vice President Joe Biden between January and July 25th, and how many times?
I didn't look at Twitter. I try to stay off Twitter lately.
I know. I get my news from Twitter. I keep all my information right here in my grocery bag. I've got some old shoes I'm taking to Goodwill, and got some trail mix that I made. Oh, here's that Metro card. I found my Metro card, you guys. Republicans seem to believe that if you disagree with them, you are illegitimate, that the process of holding a lawless president responsible for his abuses of power is illegitimate, and that Trump and his cohorts are simply above the law. And so, as the House prepares to pass articles of impeachment and move to a trial in the Senate, Lindsey Graham, who chairs the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, has said he has one goal: to end the trial as quickly as possible without even calling witnesses.
My goal is to end this as soon as possible for the good of the country, because I think it's a danger to the presidency to legitimize this.
A couple things here then. Does that mean no witnesses at all?
I don't need any witnesses at all.
Okay, and then
I am ready to go.
In terms of time, is it a week? Is it 2 weeks? Is it a month? What is it?
It's closer to a week for sure.
A week? You want to call zero witnesses and hold the trial in a week? Most trials take forever. Roger Stone's trial took so long, it started in the 18th century. Look at that. It's his actual outfit from the inauguration. He looks like he got arrested for carjacking the Hindenburg. We now finally have two articles of impeachment awaiting a full House vote, which will likely make Trump the third president in history to be impeached. Republicans have no defense. All they can do is accuse Democrats of following
the whim and the whimper.
This has been A Closer Look.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Our guest tonight is a very funny actor and comedian you know from Showtime's hit series Billions. His stand-up special, Son of a Gary, is available now on HBO Go and HBO Now. Please welcome to the show Dan Soder, everyone.
Show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, dude.
Congrats on the special.
Thank you very much. It's out. It's done.
I know you are on the road so much during the year. You also work on Billions. You're a busy guy. Are you going to at least give yourself a break now as we head into the holidays?
Yeah, I'm still doing The Bonfire on Sirius XM Monday through Thursday with myself and Big J Okerson. And then I'm not on the road till the end of January, and it's the weirdest thing in the world.
Is that a very long break for you?
Learning how to relax. They don't teach comedians how to relax.
Yeah.
They're like, go on the road. You go until you can't go anymore.
Yeah.
And you're like, I got to relax. And then I'm like sitting there with my girlfriend, and she's like, calm down. I'm like,
You, one of the places you went this year is Scotland. You performed at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, my favorite places in the world.
Did the full run at Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And wow, do you miss American air conditioning?
Yeah. August in Europe is really brutal. And this August, I think, was particularly bad.
Yeah, and then they try to tell you. They're like, we have air conditioning. And you're like, no, you have a wet fan.
Yeah.
I want some BTUs. I want to wear a hoodie in August. That's how you know you got good AC.
So you got through your wet fan summer, though?
I got through the wet fan summer. Scotland's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. The people are so nice. And when I was there, I love dogs. I talk about it in the special, but I do. I go nuts for dogs. And I was in Edinburgh, and I saw all these dogs off leash. And I was like, you guys have a whole island of good boys.
Yeah.
It was just, I don't know if it was like this Scottish accent. They just, and they run right back. And I'm like, and I immediately turned on America. Immediately, yeah. I was like, of course we have leashes. Of course we drag our dogs. And then I asked the Scottish comedian, I'm like, hey, why are all the dogs off leash? He's like, he just beat the hell out of them. You're like, no, that's not what I wanted to hear.
There you go. So you found love in your heart for the American way again.
And I'm like, there we go. Leash up, curb your dog.
You talk in the special, you talk a good deal about death in the special. And
yeah,
you talk about,
it's
wonderfully handled, but you talk about having to apologize to your mom. Who was in the audience for the taping.
Yeah, for sure. She, my mom and I have a rule that when I work, Comedy Works in Denver, one of the best clubs in the country, and I grew up in Aurora, right outside of Denver, she has a rule where she won't tell me what show she goes to.
Oh, interesting.
Because I don't want to know she's there. Because you talk, I don't care who you are, you talk different when you know your parents are in there.
100%.
So I was like, listen, just for the sake of comedy, don't tell me when you show up. And then on Sunday, she'll be like, I was at Thursday and Saturday early. And you're like, all right. But I was doing those jokes about my dad being dead. And I went outside to smoke, something legal in Colorado. And I was around the corner from two servers from the Comedy Works, from the club. And they're sitting there smoking a cigarette. And they're like, man, on Thursday, the headliner's mom was here just laughing at all of his dead dad jokes. And I was like, yeah, Trish gets down with it. I was like, mom loves
them. That's how you know.
Yeah.
That's how you know you've come up with the best dad dead dad jokes is if the mom is going to go for him.
Yeah, and, you know, also it helps you never pay child support.
There you go.
So there's also, you also have good reason to laugh.
Yeah, so he helped in a way, too. Yeah,
he really set me up. He was all premise and setup. I was just punched.
You also had a friend in the audience of the taping of the special, which it was actually really nice because you tell a story about growing up, and he was sort of there in the audience to verify it.
I have the best group of best friends. There's six of us. And, you know, it can grow to seven or eight that we all grew up together. We're still very close. And they all came out for the special at the Bowery Ballroom. They came out from Denver. And I tell a story about farting in a teacher's face during a PSAT.
Yeah.
And my best friend that was in that classroom sat next to me in the classroom, and then I knew where he was sitting during the special. So when I told the joke, I kind of looked up, and I'm like, I ain't lying. Yeah, you're like, isn't that true? And he was like, yeah, that's true. Yeah. It was phenomenal. It was kind of fun to have her and my friends from Colorado and all, you know, comics from New York there. You know, Michelle Wolf, former
employee. Our good friend, absolutely.
Wonderful special out now. Go check it out called
Joke
Show.
Joke Show.
And I was instructed before I came out here to tell you specifically to slap some ham on it.
Slap some ham on it. That was a note from Michelle Wolf?
Yeah.
That was a thing that she always wanted me to say on this show, and it always went as well as it just went right then.
Yeah. Well, dumb streamer special, because I just bombed with it, and Michelle set me up to fail.
I want to ask about Billions. You are on this wonderful show, and I'm assuming, you know, a lot of people from all walks of life and all backgrounds enjoy the show, but finance guys must be particularly drawn to it. Do you get approached a lot by that walk of life?
It's finance bros Rocky.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like they put it on to be like, yeah! I get a lot of energy from dudes in fleece vests. Fleece vests. But they don't be like, hey, I mean, Billions is such a wonderful show to be a part of, and it's such an incredible show. It's smart, well-written. And it's funny when you just have guys walk up and go, Mafee! And they just point at you, and you're like, that's not how you say hi to people.
Yeah.
But the weirdest part is I was a waiter for 5 years here in New York, as most comedians and actors are, and I worked at Dos Caminos right in Midtown. And shout out Tableside Guacamole, which we never did. And I would wait on those stock bros. Those were the guys where I was doing lunch that wouldn't pay any attention to me.
Right.
I'd be like, hey, guys, can I get you a margarita? And they're like, yeah, whatever, bro. And not looking, and now they're like, you! And you're like, no, not now, not now. When I was double sat, maybe, but not now.
Yeah. That's how life works. You never get the attention when you want it.
Yeah.
Hey, man, congrats on the special, and thanks so much for
thanks
being
so
here.
Thanks so much.
That's Dan Soder, everybody. Son of a Gary, available on HBO. Go on HBO now.
Comedian Ryan Reese hanging out backstage at Late Night with Seth Meyers with New York City comedian Dan Soder. Dan,
yes.
How you doing, bud?
Hey, buddy. We're hanging out on a podcast. This is great.
It's a little weird.
It's crazy.
Yeah, that we're doing this here.
Yeah.
Because we work together nightly downtown at the Cellar.
Yeah. I see you every night at the Cellar, and it's fun to be like, hey, at Seth Meyers, you want to talk? I was like, yeah, of course. When you called me about it, I'm like, dude, that's a no-brainer.
Actually, I had some people call your people,
too. It was crazy. The whole time, I'm like, dude, Ryan, you could have just reached out, and I would have been like, hell yeah.
You're actually about to go on, which is crazy. I'm really excited that you decided to do this before. Like, most people want to get in their own zone or their headspace. Do you worry about that at all before you go on?
I think it's different with comics. I'm never the type of person that wants to be alone before a show. I'm like, oh, let's be conversational, because I'm going out to be conversational. So for me, it's like, if I can hang out and talk to people, I would like to be having a conversation 2 minutes before I go on stage.
But is that in every scenario? Like, even
at clubs,
but even when you film specials or you did a late night set? Come on.
I sat in the hallway of when we taped at the Bowery Ballroom, when we taped Son of Gary for HBO. I was in the hallway with Big Jay Oakerson talking. And then he grabbed the God mic and was like, ladies and gentlemen, Dan Soder. And I just walked out, and it was like, we were having a conversation up to that second.
And how do you know Big J? What do you do with him?
The Bonfire.
Yeah, there you go.
Monday through Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m., Comedy Central Radio, Sirius XM 95. But it really is, that's the antithesis. I mean,
even for your first TV appearance, like your first TV set that you ever did, a stand-up special, or like even the 5 minutes was a premiere.
Live at Gotham.
Yeah.
Live at Gotham in 09, I didn't, and I got in my own head.
Yeah.
I just kind of spun in a circle. And then when I did Conan, I can't say the name, another show starting with a C, I was with Nate Bargatze. I was looking down at my feet, ready to go out, and I just hear from behind me, I hear Nate go, you going to stare at your fate the whole time? And I looked over, and then they broke open the curtains, and I walked out and did stand-up, and I was like, and then the second time I did Conan, I was by myself.
Oh, no.
And I hated it, and I didn't think I had a good set, and I just didn't like it, but it was like, oh, yeah, I've just learned over time I just need someone there.
Someone to bounce off of.
Just someone to be like this. And someone that was like, hey, can we do the podcast first? They're like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, this is...
I didn't want to bug you.
No, not at all. This is great.
He's going to be focusing.
No, not at all.
Now, you didn't start in New York. You started in Arizona?
Yeah, Tucson, Arizona. I started at Laughs Comedy Club when I was going to the University of Arizona.
Now, what's that? I feel like I haven't been to Arizona, but I feel like it could be a little rough.
It's rough.
It's rough.
It's real rough. But you'd get some headliners that would come through that would be really, really funny. Either young guys or kind of older guys that have been passed over. So the thing that was great about Laughs is Scotty Goff, the owner at the time, let me just come in and watch any show I wanted to. And then
isn't
would
that
give
the
me
the best, yeah.
It just give me guest sets. And it was just like, and then I started getting gigs at casinos that were like one nighters. And it was just like, I wasn't headlining, but I was opening, featuring.
When did you come to New York? What year?
2007. I moved here January 6th, 2007.
What was like your first, were you playing the Village? Like, were you playing some of
my first ever spot was an open mic at Stand Up New York on Sunday nights. And I met Brian Koppelman, who's my boss on Billions.
Yeah, I was going to be like, well, geez, all right.
But I didn't know him. I didn't know who he was. He was just an older guy at the bar. You know,
Rounder sucks.
I know. Dude, I swear to God, I didn't know he was a screenwriter until like maybe our fourth or fifth hang.
Yeah.
I thought he was just a guy. Honestly, and you'll know this as a comedian, I thought he was an older guy getting into comedy, and that kind of made me feel like, ooh, what's going on in your life, bud?
You tried to talk him out of it? You're like, listen.
I'm like, no, I was almost overly supportive because I'm like, dude, if you're doing this now, you got to do it. Get in. Get into it. And then eventually he would go with me to like open mics and we'd go to like bar shows. And finally I was like, what do you do? And he's like, I'm a screenwriter. And I was like, sure. I'm a comic. I'm a comic and you're a screenwriter. And he's like, no, I'm a screenwriter. I have to go to LA for work this week. And I'm like, oh, yeah. He's like, I wrote a movie. And I was like, what movie? And he goes, Ocean's 13. And he was like, yes, that is a movie that is coming out soon. And it was pretty cool. I watched Ocean's 13 with Koppelman the Thursday night it came out.
Wow.
Like we sat in like a theater and watched it. It was pretty crazy.
It's a nice bounce of the ball.
Yeah, it was a great bounce of the ball. And it was a thing where he just became, I think a lot of people, I watched a lot of people around him be like, hey, give me a role. Hey, give me a role. And I was like, that's always seemed crazy to me. Koppelman, I think, was just interested in seeing my progression through comedy.
There's something about, like, I met you at the Laugh Factory in New York City.
Yeah,
but like
right
you
in
have
Square.
You have a presence. Yeah. You have a voice that's very distinct and obvious and different from everyone else.
As my teachers used to say, your voice carries. That's why I would get in trouble in school all the time. Because they'd be like, Dan Soder, I heard you. And I'd be like,
because this voice, you've had it since you were a child.
Small child. I used to call my friends to play, and I remember my friend Lewis Condon, I called his house, and I was like, hey, can Lewis come outside and play? And his mom goes, who is this? I go, this is Daniel Soder. And she goes, oh my God, I thought you were his football coach. And I was like, what a weird phone call that would be. His coach is like, hey, Lewis around? Just saw him take off his pads, wondering if he wanted to hang out. Yeah, it was... I used to call Toys R Us to see if they had action figures because I loved action figures.
Who didn't?
And I X-Men put out a Gambit action figure. It was very hard to find. So I'd call KB Toys. I'd call Toys R Us. And I remember I called Toys R Us and I was like, do you guys have Gambit, the X-Men action figure? And they got on the phone. They go, miss? And I go, I'm a boy. And I was like, oh, I have the voice of a grown lady. And that was like the base. And then it just stayed this way.
Now, you come from an interesting family background.
Yeah.
Do you think it influenced your comedy a lot?
Oh, hell yeah. I think when you grow up alone as an only child with like a single mom that's stressed out, you immediately become the person that breaks the tension. Where you're like, this sucks. If I'm not funny, this is going to be a bummer of a dinner. But my mom has a good sense of humor, so I can get her out of her moods by being funny. And then you learn that like only children and babies of the family tend to go to comedy a lot more than other people.
That's interesting.
Yeah. My therapist told me about this. He's like, yeah, of course you're a comedian. You're an only child. And I was like,
but then why would
babies
go?
You're used to entertaining yourself. That's what stand-up is. You're entertaining yourself.
Why would babies go then?
Because they're used to being the like the show, like, you know, they're the attention. They're like the babies. So they're like, everyone loves me. And I talked about this with Michael Che, because Michael Che is the youngest of 10.
Yeah.
And you see it. And once I heard that from my therapist, I was like, now I know Che better. I've got the inside track. Because it is, when I find out which one of my friends are babies of the family, you're like, oh, that does make sense.
It's an interesting theory.
It's a very interesting theory.
I'm just curious. I'd like to ask comedians this. What do you consider like your break? Like whether it's a club, a spot, what was like something that meant something to you?
Montreal 2011, doing Unwrapped. I went up there and it was like, you know how it is. You're just mm-hmm. plugging away. And then finally someone's like, hey, I'll help you. And you're like, whoa, really? And then then from there it was like starting to actually do comedy, get on the road, headline. I got, you know, Comedy Central Half Hour. And from there going on the road was like, you know,
how much were you getting up when you started as compared to now? What's more?
I mean, I was getting up more. I was doing it 7 nights a week.
Yeah.
On average, I was doing 25 sets a week.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And then now I do 10 to 17.
You do that on purpose so you can have a little bit of a...
Yeah, you need a break. I stopped doing it on Sundays. I do it 6 nights a week and then just take Sundays off.
Yeah.
And I usually try to do 2 a night. But I was trying to do 4 on a Tuesday and just busting your hump. But by the way, when you have nothing...
You have to. You have to because you're competing with the best comedians in the world. That's New York City.
Yeah, and then just to stay sharp, I have to do 2 a night. I want to do 2 a night.
You get addicted.
Yeah, you do. And then you're like... And I like going from one spot to the other.
What do you like better, radio or stand-up?
Stand-up. I mean, I love doing radio because I love doing it with Big J.
Mm-hmm.
It's our friendship. It's like it's hanging out with your friend for 2 hours. Outside of that, I don't think I'd have any interest in doing radio.
But you've done radio before.
Yeah, that's why I don't have any interest. Okay. I did radio for a long time. I worked in radio from 2004. I got hired in Tucson in 2003. 2004, and then I worked there till 07, and then from 07 to 09, I worked at K-Rock here in New York doing overnight shifts.
Yeah, I think when I met you, you had told me that. And I was like, you're doing overnights?
Overnights, dude. Midnight to 6 a.m., baby. And then I was doing 6 a.m. to noon. So I would go do check spots at Stand Up New York, get blackout drunk, and then go sleep in the Opie and Anthony studio, which was the old Stern studio, from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m., and then wake up terribly hungover. Go outside, smoke a cigarette, get a cup of coffee, come back up and do 6 to noon. Quitting drinking was probably the greatest thing I ever did.
In 2014?
13, yeah.
13.
March of 2013, I worked for Guinness, and on my last gig in Denver, Colorado, where I grew up, was the last time I ever had a sip of alcohol. Nice. It's pretty crazy.
So last thing I want to ask you, so we have a relationship. I like to just end on a little personal thing here. Every time I bring you to the stage...
Yeah. I make fun of you.
Yes, but in a very specific way. You make me a different member of your life.
My favorite ones that I've said about you are, you look like a brother I'm trying to borrow money off of. I said, you look like a guy that marries my sister that I trust. I said, you have substitute teacher energy. I think I was wearing a tie at that point.
You
were wearing a tie. That's why I said that. I go, keep it going for the old substitute teacher energy. I'm going to get kicked out of the hallway. But I do that with every MC that I like.
Yeah.
If I like an MC, it's like, oh, I'm going to bust your balls. If I'm just like, hey, that person, there's... I had a guy say that to me on the road, an MC I didn't like. He's like, hey, I noticed you made fun of the MC on Thursday, but you didn't make fun of me on Friday or Saturday. And I wanted to be like, yeah, we're not friends. I don't like, you know what I mean? Because I think in comedy, ball busting is...
Totally. But it's very unique the way you do it.
What does this guy look like?
Some guy that's dating my mom and wants to be my friend.
Yes, I was like, what is this? I said John Fish one time had camp counselor energy. I don't do it for the audience. I do it for the staff and for the comics.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Because I'll know, like, Angie from The Cellar, she'll, like, die laughing if I hit it. If I get a good one, she'll laugh, and I'm like, all right, that was good.
Well, I think you got to do a TV show, but...
I'm going to go sit and talk to...
Cellar, is that where they can see you?
Comedy Cellar, The Stand, dansoder.com for tour dates. I'm on the road starting January 2020.
Awesome, dude.
Dude, thanks for having me.
Absolutely,
yeah, man. It's fun.
All right.
Yeah.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.